Welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Explaining and countering RINsanity. I'm John Davis reporting. There's been a lot of talk about the prices for renewable identification numbers, better known as RINs, especially from big oil, trying to blame RINs for the rise in gasoline prices. But Ron Lamberty, Senior Vice President with the American Coalition for Ethanol, or ACE, says you first have to understand what a RIN is.
It's a renewable identification number, and every gallon of renewable fuel that's made has one of these numbers. But what it is in practice is basically it's like a proof of purchase on something that you buy. So in the renewable fuel standard, if a refiner is required to buy a certain number of gallons of ethanol, and they buy gallons of ethanol to blend with gasoline, a RIN comes on that, and it doesn't cost anything. RINs are free. Now, if you buy a lot more than you were supposed to, or if you're not a refiner or somebody who's considered an obligated party, then you can have excess RINs that you can sell to others who didn't buy as much ethanol as they needed to buy. I've heard it described as RINs being the currency of the renewable fuel standard. In other words, you know, if I'm a refiner and I have to buy a billion gallons of ethanol this year, I have to be able to prove to them that I bought it. And in order to trace it all the way back to make sure that it's real, that it's not just a number that, you know, some guy said he produced a million gallons of ethanol and sold a phony RIN or something to somebody, to make sure that it's real, they'll have numbers that are traced all the way back to the ethanol plant.
And he counters some of Big Oil's arguments that these RINs are driving overall gas prices higher.
Currently, you know, we've seen a run-up of prices on RINs. You know, the volume of them has been relatively small, so we don't know if that represents, I mean, we don't know who's buying them, who's selling them, but the point then is being made that this is making fuel more expensive, when in fact it should have nothing to do with what's happening with fuel, because we're not short of ethanol. There's plenty of ethanol in stock. We're not even really short of RINs. There were over 2.5 billion RINs carried over from last year that can be used this year. So anyone who wants to buy ethanol right now can get ethanol, and they get a RIN with it for free. So ideally, you would think that someone who wants to work the system would buy extra ethanol, as much as they could possibly tuck into every corner they can get to, blend it all, and then have the RINs to sell to, heck, even maybe your competitors. But on the other side of that is we're also hearing that small marketers and folks out there who are doing some blending, who buy maybe E85 directly from an ethanol plant and have a RIN to sell, that they're not getting anybody who wants to buy their RINs for the prices that we're seeing on the national market. So I don't know how realistic those prices are, but what is being portrayed as what they indicate is not at all what I think they indicate. I think what it indicates is that some people are selling them back and forth to each other, maybe panic selling, maybe opportunity selling, but it doesn't have any real connection to the real world at this point.
Executive Vice President at ACE, Brian Jennings, says they're trying to get in front of what he terms this RINsanity, especially during ACE's recent fly-in to Washington, D.C. to talk about ethanol issues with members of Congress.
What we're trying to explain to folks is that a RIN is free to a refiner as long as a refiner purchases a gallon of ethanol pursuant to the RFS. And if obligated party buys more ethanol than what the RFS calls for, then a RIN is something of value to them. Members of Congress don't quite understand that a RIN doesn't belong to ethanol producers, and so we're helping educate them that a RIN is something that we sort of give away for free to the oil companies, and the oil companies are trading these things amongst themselves. And I think that's opened a lot of eyes on Capitol Hill. The RIN market, which did take off in the last couple of weeks, is unregulated. It's, you know, there's no regulation or transparency. It's refiners calling other refiners saying, "Do you have any RINs for sale?" "Yes, I do. How much will you give them or sell them to me for?" And so maybe this will make Congress kind of pay closer attention to what oil companies are doing to perhaps drive these RIN prices places they shouldn't go, all the while avoiding blending ethanol with gas.
Lamberty adds the RIN is just part of the overall strategy behind the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, the federally mandated level at which renewable fuels must be used and vehicle to promote using more of that alternative energy. And that strategy is working.
We've got an industry, the ethanol industry, that's grown in the past 8 years. That's grown from around 2.5 to about 13 billion gallons of ethanol. We're getting close to 10% of the gasoline supply. And as a result, we're getting further away from the time when the renewable fuel standard was put into place. We had about 60% imports of oil. We were making most of our fuel out of stuff that we got from other people. Now our net imports are down to 40%. Now that's not all because of us. I mean, there are the other fines that you have that you know, people talk about strangely, glowingly, as opposed to when they talk about ethanol. But without ethanol, you'd still be close to 50-50 at best. You'd be maybe, I think 48 has been the estimate I've seen, but not as we wouldn't be doing as well as we do right now if we didn't have ethanol. Even the EIA study that people talk about when they say we're going to be energy independent, if you look at the details of that study, it also assumes that we're going to have quite a bit of savings because of conservation, but I think it's 25 to 29% of it is going to be renewables. So, you know, this idea that we should get rid of the renewable fuel standard, that somehow, you know, everyone else would be gracious enough to keep buying things when all we've seen from the oil companies is, I mean, lawsuits and PR campaigns and the kind of, you know, misinformation that we see even about the RINs right now. They don't want this to happen. I understand it. You know, they've had a, 95-99% stranglehold on the fuel supply. We're now closing in on 10, and I think 90 is their line in the sand. They don't want to have any less than that, and they're going to pull out all the stops to try and stop us. But we have to have other choices. If it's clear that the only thing that will keep prices in line at all is if we have the choice to go to something else.
Lamberty also says it comes down to giving the consumers a choice, sentiments echoed by Jennings.
If the RFS is able to work like it's intended to work, it's going to be a catalyst for innovation. It's going to be a catalyst for commercializing new fuels. It's going to be, I think, what we ultimately want is a catalyst for consumer choice. And so you have fuels out there that are blended with various percentages of ethanol, whether that's E15 or E30 or other blends, E85, that consumers have a choice. They can look at the price, they can look at the blend of ethanol, they can use what works best in their vehicles. And that's ultimately, I think, what we're trying to get at, and enabling the market to work, enabling an alternative to oil that's more innovative, more cost-effective, and cleaner to be able to compete, and for consumers to make their choice freely.
Jennings concludes that lawmakers need to realize this choice in prices and lessening of dependence on foreign oil all boils down to making sure the RFS, with these RINs, stays in place.
Consumers have had good experience with E10 and other blends of ethanol and gasoline. Consumers, no matter what they tell you in a survey, consumers buy fuel based on price, and there isn't a close second, as I said earlier, and typically, ethanol is going to be the more affordable fuel choice, whether that's E10 today, which, you know, is saving significant money compared to gasoline, or E15. That's what consumers are looking for, something that's safe, something that works, but ultimately something that is less expensive than gas. And so we feel good about our product. We have a lot of confidence in our product to be able to be low cost, to be able to be cleaner, to be able to perform well. We just got to get it out there to consumers, and the RFS is sort of the policy mechanism that enables that to happen.
I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.